Today we have a special episode for Halloween and Samhain of spooky stories from us and from our listeners. Let's begin with some stories from a nurse of 40 years who has experienced some unexplainable encounters while working. For the sake of the privacy of everyone involved in these stories, we have omitted any names or places. There is one story that involves a suicide, so if this is not a suitable subject matter, please skip the next 5 minutes.
I would also like to thank all the guests today for giving their time to share their stories with us. So let's begin with our first story.
Okay. Well, I have been a nurse for over 40 years. So during that time, I've seen a lot of strange things. And this is just a few of them. We had one situation on a medical floor. And the floor was kind of a long hallway down either side. And at the end, it looped around where the patient's sunroom was. And one night, very late at night, nurses saw a gentleman walking down the hallway from the back, just, you know, gentleman in a long trench coat. And he went around the corner by the sunroom, and nobody should have been there. This was quite late at night. No visitors should have been there. So one nurse went straight down one hallway to cut him off, sort of thing, when another nurse went down the next hallway over. So they should have caught him in the middle. They both came around the corner looking at one another, nobody there. So this person just vanished.
Are there any closets or other doors that they could have gone into?
No, absolutely nowhere. There was just the sunroom and the emergency exit, which alarms. No patient rooms they could have gone into. So yeah, no, he just disappeared. And he was seen on more than one occasion. Another instance we had is one hospital where patients in a particular room would often ask us about the little child that they saw crying in a corner. They would wake up in the middle of the night and say that they saw a child sitting in the corner crying. Nurses didn't actually see this child, but there were instances where they'd walk into the room, and we used to hang little just utility scissors on a bulletin board, just with a thumbtack sort of thing. And the scissors would be spinning around in a circle, as if somebody was sitting and playing with them. You know, sometimes when things were very, very quiet, you know, if we had a lot of empty beds, not too many patients, when the nurses would take their break in the middle of the night, they might sometimes slip into one of these rooms where it was quiet. And that was one room that nurses would not go into, because they would talk about it's like feeling like fingers up their back and things like that. So that would really freak them out. Well, it was a very old unit, like it was an old part of the hospital. So over the years, it had changed uses. At this point in time, it was an adult cardiac unit. But prior to that, it had been the like for baby, a baby ward, but the child that they spoke of was older. So we're not really sure where that came from. We had another situation at one hospital where a staff nurse ended up being a patient. And when she was on the floor, she would wander, you know, in and out of anywhere, because, you know, all the staff knew her. She worked there. So nobody would stop her if she went into one of the utility rooms or storage rooms. And for some reason, one night, she went in and she actually got a medication out, and she went back to her room and she overdosed on insulin. It wasn't morphine, it was insulin. So it was a very deliberate suicide attempt, unfortunately. But when they found her, she was rushed up to the intensive care unit, and the room she was put in when she had a cardiac, you know, she finally started to pass away. They couldn't revive her. The light above the bed started flickering and flashing like crazy. And at the time, everybody just assumed, oh, you know, it's like a glitch, you know, with the light bulb or something in the fluorescent light, and nobody thought much of it. After that point, anytime a patient in that bed was about to pass away, the light would start going crazy. And everybody used to say, it's like, because she was a nurse, she was letting the other nurses know, hey, come over here, something's about to happen. I think the weirdest one I ever personally experienced was I had a patient many years ago, and this gentleman, he had a heart condition. he was going to pass away from it. There was, you know, and he knew that too. It wasn't a great surprise, but he would be sitting up in bed talking to us. And then suddenly he just kind of like pass out, and we could watch on the monitor, his heart rate just stop. And, you know, you'd be watching it, kind of waiting to see. And, you know, after 20, 30, 40 seconds, his heart would start up again on its own. And, you know, he'd kind of come around and he'd say like, oh, I'm sorry, I fell asleep. He thought he was falling asleep. You know, we knew otherwise, but, you know, we weren't going to upset him. So this started happening more and more frequently over a period of 2 to 3 days. So it was happening more often and happening for longer periods of time. Like sometimes it'd be up to a minute, and then it would just spontaneously, his heart rate would start up again. And we were going like, okay, this is just bizarre. But at one point he was saying, it's like, oh, I'm having the worst nightmares. And of course, you know, we're all like going, nightmares? Like, you were clinically dead. Like, what kind of nightmare are you having? And he told us, it's like he would see angels. And these angels were reaching for him. And we said, well, are they scary angels? Is that why you think it's a nightmare? And he's like, no. He goes, I just know when they finally reach me, I'll be dead. And that was just the weirdest thing for somebody to say. But that, you know, that just kind of freaked me out. I've had patients tell me that, you know, they won't be there the next morning. And it's like, no, like everything's fine. Like, are you not feeling well? We check them out. Everything would be fine. Next time you do rounds, they'd be dead. It's like they knew.
Yeah.
That something was going to happen.
I don't want to believe in an afterlife, but it's really odd when all of those medical mystery shows, when somebody dies or has a near-death experience and comes back to life, they always say that they saw a light or something, or their depiction of heaven or hell.
Well, I grew up in a family where kind of belief in, I don't want to say supernatural per se, but certainly premonitions or seeing signs and things mm-hmm. was quite normal with both of my grandmothers on both sides of the family. And, you know, things like my one grandmother, 1 year, she had a real, you know, green thumb. She could grow anything. And 1 year, her geraniums, they all went, you know, dark brown around the edge of the leaves and were dying off. And, you know, nothing she did revived them. And later that year, their house burned down. And of course, to her, that was a premonition. So yeah, we used to get a lot of those growing up, these weird premonitions. And I had a few happen to me personally. I know one day I was about, I don't know, 13, 14, coming down from upstairs from like the bedroom area, coming down the stairs, and the phone rang. And my mom went to go answer the phone, and I just looked at her. I said, you know, that'll be my uncle. My grandfather passed away. And, you know, I use names, obviously. And she's like, all upset. She goes, did they already call? I said, no, he's just calling now. And it was, he had passed. And this is somebody that he was a step grandfather. I hardly knew him. But yeah, it just like popped out of my mouth. Don't know why. When I was about 10, my one great grandmother had passed away. It was the middle of the school year. So my parents were going up to the funeral. They were going to leave me with the other side of the family, my brother and I. And when they came in to wake me up in the morning, around 6 a.m. to drop us off, I was very upset when they woke me up and I said, I have to go. I have to go to his funeral. And they're going, no, it's your great grandmother. You hardly knew her. It's fine. I said, no, I have to go to his funeral. And the phone rang at that moment. And it was a phone call from my aunt saying that my uncle had died that night.
Wow.
So yeah, I had a few weird things. I knew like when my grandfather passed away, I was down in Massachusetts at the time on vacation. And I just like at one point said, it's like, okay, I need to go home now.
Mm-hmm.
And got home. And basically roughly the same time I said that to my friend, which was around 10:30 at night, is when he had passed away.
So that actually segues perfectly into the story that I was going to tell for today. Unfortunately, once again, does have to deal with death. Basically, what happened was one time I was living by myself downtown, and I had a very small one-bedroom apartment, and my dad's from a nearby suburb, and he was working in the city one night, and it was a random Wednesday, and this was in my early 20s while I was still bartending, and he gave me a call, and mind you, my father and I were not the closest. He would never just come over, and I would never just be okay with that. So let's say it was a Wednesday, and he gives me a phone call, and he's like, hey, can I come over? I'm actually working in the area. And I had nothing to do that night, so it was around 6 p.m. I'm like, yeah, sure, come over. We'll just order food and, you know, have dinner, and then you can go home. So he came over, we ordered food, we were pretty tired because, as I said, he'd come back from work and it's getting into the evening, and I don't know why I suggested this, because once again, I would never just sit down and just watch a movie with my dad, but I threw a movie on the TV and we watched it, and then we realized it was very late and he had to go all the way back to the suburb and then back in the morning to work once again in Toronto. So I don't know why I proposed this, but I was like, why don't you just stay over if you have to be up in a couple hours? I have extra toothbrushes, extra sweatpants and clothes, you know, have extra soap, and let's just like rewash your clothes tonight and you can stay on my pullout couch in the living room. So he did that. We set up the pullout bed for him and I went to the bedroom. But I couldn't sleep that night. I've always had problems sleeping. So around 2 a.m., I went into the kitchen and it was open concept. So I would have passed him in the living room. And I went to the kitchen to make myself a tea, but he was already there making himself a tea because he couldn't sleep as well. I was like, okay, this is weird. So we just sat in silence, had our tea, and I went back to the bedroom, tried to read a book and sleep, and he probably did the same. The next morning we woke up and it was very, very early. We both had to go to work. He had to go to work around like 6 a.m. So I made a breakfast and we sat down, had the breakfast, pretty silent, pretty quiet. And he got a phone call. And I knew exactly what that phone call was the second it rang. And he answered it, and it was my sister-in-law being like, Conrad, his name's Conrad, and she's like, Conrad, are you with someone? And my dad has a history of, you know, depression, etc. And he's like, yeah, I'm with someone. Why, what happened? And she said, your mom passed away, so my grandmother passed away last night. And he's very fragile. His mom is like his best friend, and I honestly know that if he wasn't with me, he probably would have had a heart attack or something because his mom means so much to him. And I get on the phone with my sister-in-law and I asked her, when did this happen? Because we knew it was coming. She's been in a retirement home for a long time at that point. And she said around 9:15 last night. And I looked at my watch that I used to wear and it was stopped at 9:15, the time of her death. To this day, I still have that watch as a memory of my grandma passing. And I honestly feel that it was very, very important that my dad and I were together that night. And it's still very odd to me because that never happens. I don't see my dad regularly. And I just knew that there was something that made us be together that night. And I hope it was my grandma, you know. So yeah, that was my story.
Yeah, you just get that feeling, and it just kind of pops into your head. It's not like it's something that you've been thinking about, or you know, or even somebody that you kind of anticipated. It's like, oh well, they're not doing well, so I know I'm going to get that phone call any day now. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, just out of the blue. Like, well, with my uncle that had died that night, he'd actually been murdered, so like there was no way to kind of predict that.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
His case was actually, they used to have Unsolved Mysteries, the Unsolved Mysteries show. And his file was actually presented on that.
Oh, wow.
Because they could never confirm who did it. They knew it was done, but they had their suspicions. But they could never prove it.
Yeah, wow. It's odd, this sense that we have, even though, like you said, nothing could have foreseen these things happening. You just know. Yes, thank you for sharing. Our next guest is actually Steph's friend. So Steph, I'll just let you introduce him.
Our next special guest is going to be one of my dear friends, Chris, and he's going to tell you some really spooky stories. Take it away.
In the summer of 2015, my sister, my mom, my aunt, and my cousin, everybody lives in New Brunswick. So they're in this place. It's called St. Andrews by the Sea. It's a beautiful place, tons of rich history, but it's really, really old, which I think kind of adds to the vision and the allure of this place. So they decided that they were going to go to St. Andrews because they'd heard about some locally famous ghost walks. So they go to St. Andrews. They joined up with their tour group and their guide, who goes by the name Miss Demeanor, which I think is a fantastic name for a tour guide for ghost tours. But anyway, so she started them off. They go to the local graveyard, and they go to a couple other locations before they proceed to the courthouse that's in St. Andrews. So they made a stop outside, and the tour guide informed them that the next area of the tour, the courthouse, is a place that's been reportedly very active on her previous tours, that people have experienced certain feelings, certain emotions on this tour. So my sister and my mom, everybody, they go in and they think like, oh, okay, interesting. Yeah, nothing's going to happen to us, but that's cool that things have happened to people here before. So she's taking them through the main hall, goes through, they go into the judge's chamber, and then stops to tell them a story. So she's explaining about one of these cases that had come through the courthouse, and while they're standing there, my sister hears this like small like plink sound. So she's looking around and she's like, what was that little sound? So she looks down and her necklace had fallen off. So she's thinking like, whatever, it's no big deal. The necklace just came undone. It's okay. Like I'll just pop it back on. So she picks it up and she asks my mom, like, hey, can you help me put my necklace back on? Like, it fell off. So my mom looks at it and holds it up, and the clasp is still done up. So it fell off her neck with the clasp still attached. So it didn't come undone. It didn't slide off. And my sister was wearing like a choker style necklace. So it's not like, even if she was to have bent over, which she didn't, it's not like it could have fallen off or anything. So the necklace is 100% still intact. So she doesn't really think about it or anything like that. So my mom's like, whatever, let's put your necklace back on. So she puts it back on, make sure that it's secure, it's not going to fall off again. And they continue listening to Miss Demeanor's story. And then a couple minutes go by, story goes on, necklace is on the floor again. So they take a look at it again, and sure enough, it's in the exact same state that it was the first time. The clasp is still attached, there's nothing loose, couldn't have fallen off her head, was not a choker. So at this point, they've kind of gathered a little bit of interest from the other people on the tour, and the guide even stopped the tour and said, like, what's going on here? Like, what's happening with your necklace? So the way that the tour guide described it afterwards, she said it was almost like somebody had reached through my sister and pulled the necklace off, which is what my sister likes to believe is what happened that night. And she thinks it was kind of like somebody wanting their presence to be acknowledged while they were in the courthouse, and like she says, like, oh, it's something that really did get my attention. So I don't know, like, it was such a strange thing, and it's something that stuck with my sister for forever. Like, my sister, my mom, my cousin even wrote about it in the local newspaper down there, so it got quite a bit of attention. And it's actually been featured as well in another podcast where they discuss the paranormal events around Charlotte County and New Brunswick and the courthouse. And the guide, Misdemeanor, she still uses that specific event as one of her stories while she's doing her tours now. So she thought enough of that it was interesting and inexplicable, and that it was certainly worth retelling.
Thank you, Chris. I really love the Misdemeanor name. That's amazing. We're going to switch it up a little bit. I think we're going to have Steph tell a story. We have some other guests on, but then Chris has some more stories to share at the end of our podcast as well.
I'm going to try and put on a spooky voice, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. It was a crisp October night. I remember the time of year distinctly because this memory will always stick with me. I lived in a smaller townhouse with my parents when I was a teenager. My room was two different shades of blue, and I had a standing lamp with a built-in shelf that stood in the opposite corner of the room to my bed. The light somehow seemed dimmer that night, like there was almost a veil, or as if the light bulb was about to go out. It got to around midnight or later. I always read in bed pretty late, sometimes till morning. And as I felt myself getting tired, I lay my book aside and I cautiously let myself drift off. I say cautiously because I could already feel something was just not the same. This is where it gets hard to differentiate a dream from reality. I dreamt or saw a man in the corner of my room. He was older, of shorter stature, and was leaned against the wall, shrugging his shoulders, uncrossing and crossing his arms, as if to express he was uncomfortable. I could hear his breathing. He sounded like he was suffocating through his breath, as if there was a blockage or a lot of fluid. I made my eyes or my mind focus on the figure's face, and I felt like I knew him. He started walking towards my lamp and eventually stared over at me, his breath getting heavier and more stifled. I woke up shivering, terrified of what I just dreamt or have seen, and being unable to tell the difference. The next day, I asked my mother to see some photos of family that I never got to meet since they passed away before I was born. And there I saw him, my great-grandfather. I asked my mother how he died, and she responded with emphysema. I shuddered. It had to be him. I had recently found his old Freemason Bible and placed it on my lamp shelf, which is the thing he must have been reaching for. Did you like that one? I feel like I've told you that, like, this story before.
Mm-hmm. Well, you obviously didn't say it like that, but
yeah.
Steph, I feel like you're on a roll, so if you want to tell your other story now as well. I like the ambiance you've created.
This one I named Foggy Walk. This one is kind of spooky. Like, think about it. I get chills because I don't know if it was just me that night. I feel like what happened was real. I just don't know what it was. Okay. I was walking home from the university library one night. It was extremely foggy, and the streetlights looked like faded sunbeams. I was never really fearful of walking home on my own in that area, even though I definitely should have been. As I got to the halfway point, I noticed that no one else was on the street that night. Usually there would be at least two or three passersby, but there was none. I started to get this really eerie feeling that sent chills up my spine and gave my whole body painful goosebumps. As I felt the goosebumps come on, the street light ahead of me flickered and went out. I paused and reached for my keys. knuckle up, of course, and my phone. I looked ahead, and I swear I thought I saw a shadow. The shadow moved towards me, and I started backing up. It walked right through me. I felt my heart stop and my blood turn cold. There was nobody there, but I felt someone or something walk right by or through me. And to this day, I still cannot explain it because I've never felt anything like that before. It was one of the weirdest experiences I've ever had. And it's weird because usually you would expect it, like in a house, like in a creepy old house or just somewhere indoors. But this was outside on a street, like surrounded by houses. But like, I swear I saw and felt exactly what I described.
Creepy. Okay, I'm super excited for our next story. It's a really fun one. And I feel like with scary stories, there's always skeptics or always people saying, but this is one person's point of view and the other person could have been messing around with them. So for our next story, I'm bringing back one of our guests from a previous episode, one of my best friends, Warda. And just want to say, welcome back, Warda.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
We have a story that we're going to share from a time that we traveled together, and we'll each tell our own perspective, so you can be the judge and decide what actually happened. In 2018, for my birthday around September, Warda took me on a flight to Ottawa, where we stayed at the Ottawa Jail for 2 nights. The Ottawa Jail, I think, was in use for around over a century and housed a lot of people, a lot of criminals. There was people that were hung there because they had a death row at the time. And in 1972, the jail was closed, and recently it became a jail hostel, so more of a tourist attraction. But back then, there were numerous prisoners, men, women, children, forced to share these really small jail cell units where Warda and I actually slept, and they now have bunk beds in them, but they're very, very tiny. So, you know, we had to like shuffle around each other, but each jail cell now houses either one or two bunk beds that you can share with your friends. So we went there and we got a brief history of the place. Apparently there was famous people such as an assassin named Patrick Whelan who was hung there, numerous unmarked graves. There were people who had scratched their names in the wall with their nails while they were in confinement. It was a very, very scary setting. Now, the cell that we had specifically, like I said, it was just a bunk bed. So I was top bunk and Warda was bottom bunk. And there was a very tiny, I think, a sink in it and a mirror in it. And that's all there was. And the jail cell doors are still the original doors, those heavy iron bars that, you know, you really have to push and it squeaks when it moves. And it's just very heavy doors. But you can also, since it's railings, you can hear everyone down the hallway, because it kept its original infrastructure, I guess. So my version of the story was that Warda was in her bottom bunk and, you know, it's just the afternoon. We were looking at what to do in Ottawa because Ottawa is a fairly big city. So we were trying to pick what we were going to do that day. So Warda had her back turned to me. So she was facing the wall, but she was on her phone, looking up, I don't know, just hanging out on Instagram or just looking up possibly where we could go that night. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna let you relax. So I got down from my bunk bed. I'm like, I'm gonna let you relax. I'm gonna go downstairs and check out the bar downstairs and see if anyone has any recommendations for what we can do that day. And we're just like on her phone, like we're talking to each other. She doesn't have headphones in or anything. So she's still facing the wall though. So her back's turned to me. And she's like, okay, sure, sounds good. So I went down to the basement where they put in a bar, and I had a gin and tonic while talking to the bartender a little bit more about the jail hostel, the history of it, and he was giving us recommendations for what to do. So I had a quick drink and I came back up. So it must have been around 20 minutes, you know, just a quick conversation over a drink, and then I came back upstairs and I opened this heavy, heavy ass door to get in, and I close it, and it's super, I didn't mean for that door sound to be in there, my partner just walked in. So it was super heavy, like way louder than that squeak that just happened, because it's a very heavy door. And then I close it back and it would have clanged back. And I was like, okay, I'm back. And she's like, what? Where did you even go? And I'm like, yeah, I've been gone for 20 minutes. Don't mess with me. And she's just like, you were right there the whole time. And I'm like, what? And I thought she was messing with me, but I could see her face go like a little bit scared. And she must have thought that I was messing with her. And I was like, I've been gone this whole time. Did you not hear me walking around, going out and shoving the heavy door open and closed? But I'll let you tell your version of the story. It was really creepy for me, because you could clearly hear every time anyone opens a door, it's like a very, very loud, heavy door. So yeah, for her to not hear me, like, she wasn't wearing headphones, even if she was, like, you would have heard and felt the door opening and closing.
Yeah. Or so we were excited to visit this place because we love a good spook factor. And they, like Kayla said, they preserve most of the original infrastructure of the jail cells and like the jail itself. And when we got there, we went on a little tour and like looked at all the, you know, the floors, and like the creepy cells had the little plaques of which prisoner stayed there and what their crimes were. And we went to the gallows and saw that, and saw the original noose that they used to use to hang people. So we creeped ourselves out and it was fun. And yeah, and since we flew in that same day, we were a little tired. So I thought, I'm gonna lay down for a bit before we go out again. And we went to our cell, and like Kayla said, it was literally just a bunk bed and just a little like strip of space next to the bunk bed, and then the doors, or like where the bars were. And from what I remember, I was laying, like she said, with my back turned to the door, and I was just on my phone, and you know, time, like you lose sense of time and space when you're scrolling on your phone. And the creepiest part is I didn't have headphones in, and it's such a small space that I should have heard a heavy metal door open and close. But I remember just scrolling, and we were just trying to figure out where to go to eat or get drinks or whatever. And then while Kayla was looking up, I'm like, okay, let me just scroll on my own phone and see what I can find. So I was just on my phone, and yeah, and Kayla was just standing there, and I could feel her behind me, like see her, like a bit of her shadow, and feel like her presence and have a bit of her showing in like my peripherals.
Yeah, I feel, and like then, if somebody's like sitting on the edge of the bed, like it's not, even if they're not moving, you can like sense that they're there.
Yeah. And it's not like you were standing totally still. Like I felt like little movements. But yeah, so after a while, like I hear her say, okay, I'm back. And I was like, what? What do you mean? Like you were standing here the whole time. And she was like, we were both just like thinking the other is messing with the other.
Yeah,
because Kayla does that, like she loves to mess with me, and like, you know, we thought we were just being funny and spooky, but I literally could have sworn on my life that she was standing there the whole time and she wasn't even there, and that just spooked me out.
Yeah,
Yeah, I definitely thought you were like finally like getting me back for messing with you, but like your face was just like no, like you were not like joking, because like you when you joked
Yeah.
you had that little evil grin, but you were like scared too, and I was like, oh God, this is real.
No, like, no, I swear I wasn't even trying to spook you out. If you weren't there, something was definitely standing there.
That's disgusting. I hate that so much.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's a fun little story to relive, but I try not to think too deep about it because then it just like gives me goosebumps.
Because technically it happened to you, not me. So,
I mean, you slept in that same jail cell all night too, so.
yeah, thank you for that. Our next guest is Sienna, who has some museum stories for us.
Welcome to our episode, Sienna. Can't wait to hear your scary behind the scenes from work.
Yeah, I've worked for like a very long time. Started out as a summer student and now permanent at a museum. It's an old Victorian household, so it was built in the 1860s. So there are some stories from then, and then there are actually some like spooky stories kind of throughout time. It was the museum, so it was turned into a museum in the 80s. So since then, we've kind of had staff and visitors tell us ghost stories that they've experienced. I've experienced a few things, and then we also get some stories from when it was actually still a household. I'll start with a few just from staff because I actually find them the creepiest, just because I mean, my coworkers that I work with I think are very normal people and I trust them. So I definitely have some coworkers that were like, they didn't believe in it until this. And then I do have my boss actually, she's very kind of sensitive to this sort of thing. So this stuff kind of she's used to in that sense. But we do say that like most of the experience we have at the museum, like nothing's really vengeful or trying to harm us.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. But yeah, so like a few stories just to start with. An old curator worked there. Like she didn't really believe in the paranormal. And we have an old attic at the museum, and well, it was an attic, and we actually store a collection up there. But at the time, there was a few workers there, and they were working, and they kept hearing the rolly chair, like an office chair, because we have a desk up there, going back and forth in the attic. So they went up to check, and nothing had been moved. Like the chair was there, it was fine. And they were kind of like, oh, we're just hearing voices, it's no big deal. And then when they went downstairs, they heard it again, and then they went up, nothing went down again, and then they heard it again. So it's a lot of it is sounds and things throughout the museum that you hear. So
And the
I
rolly
can't.
chair, that's a specific sound too. Like you can't be like, oh, that's just a mouse in the
Yeah,
wall.
exactly. And that's a thing too. Like it is an old, like it's an old house. That's basically what it is, right? So a lot of the times we can just say like, oh, like it's the creaks, or oh, like we do have squirrels in the walls. You can just blame it on that sort of thing. But there are very specific sounds that happen. I've been thankful not to hear this because it would be pretty creepy. But where the gift shop is in the entrance, right above that is the old woodshed, but it's a gallery space, an exhibit space. And it used to be like at least once a week, staff would hear like sweeping up there. And that's like a very specific sound too. Like, and it'd be on carpet. So it'd be like broom on carpet. And yeah, they go up, be nothing. Those are kind of more calm. But to get a little bit more spookier is there have been tales that there's supposedly like a little boy in the attic. Sometimes you can hear like a ball bouncing down the attic stairs. We have a few people that refuse to go up in the attic. Our lovely, like she does the cleaning. She refuses to go up to the attic because she's so scared. And like I don't like being up there by myself either, because there are like some spaces that are darker and you kind of just feel like a little bit off up there. But I toured a group through, and when we were in the parlor, she mentioned to me like, you know, there's a woman in the chair in here, like in the corner. And I was like, oh, like no, I didn't know that. She's like, there's someone there, and like, and then I went and I was talking to my boss about it after, and she's like, oh yeah, we've gotten that before, that there's someone in the parlor, kind of thing, sitting there. So we get that a lot too, just from people coming around. Like I did another tour because we in October we actually do like ghost tours where we tour people around. They're less scary. It's not like a haunted house ghost tour. It's more like us telling them these stories and more like historical stories from the area. One group, we went to the bedroom and they like refused to go in there. And they're like, the one girl was like, I do not feel safe here. Like, you can definitely tell there's someone in the bed. I do not want to be in here, kind of thing. And like, that freaks me out. Being in that room, especially, there's like a mirror in the bedroom and then a mirror in the sitting room. they look at each other. So if you often like catch yourself in the mirror reflected again, and it's so creepy in itself. But then I also had another group tell me that that's actually like a portal. But I have had a few handful of experiences in the museum. It's happened to me twice before where I've been in the museum and it's gotten to like near the end of the day, but not like we close at 5, it'd be like 4:30. And I'll have this overwhelming sense that I need to leave. I've never experienced this before ever. I need to leave. Constant shivers, you know, when your body's like convulsing, like it's like constant shivers. Literally, I got so scared that I ran through the house, shutting off all the lights and stuff. And I like messaged my boss, I'm leaving early, like I'm closing up. And she's like, yeah, that's totally fine. When that happens, just say like, hey, I'm leaving. It's fine. I'm leaving. As if you're telling like the ghosts or whoever's there that, yeah, I'm leaving, so you'll be fine kind of thing. Another thing I experienced was, so there used to be like an old like earthenware basement. Now we've repurposed it and get kitchen bathrooms for us, but the staircase is the same down to the stairs. So I was there by myself one day and I was coming back up the staircase from going to the washroom and I heard whisper talking and I was like, oh, like I must have left like the radio on the front desk or like someone, a visitor has come in. And I get up and there's no one there because it wasn't something like creaks. It was like clearly a room away from people that were talking quietly. But one of the big ones too is like we've had people see like apparitions, one being a coworker. They were working, this was before I was there, but they were working until 5 and it was getting to be closed. And there's 3 people up the stairs in the office and then one person at front desk. And one of the girls in the office saw someone, it's right by the top grand staircase. And so the door was open and they saw someone turn the staircase, like a man. And they're like, oh, like it must be a tour. And then they're like, oh, we better let them know that we're closing soon. So she got up to walk out and the man was gone. And she described him as like a white collar, like long hair kind of look. And so they packed up their stuff or whatever. And they thought like, oh, maybe he just went really fast. He knew that they had to leave. So they walked downstairs and they asked the front desk, the coworker at the front desk, like, oh, like, did you send like a 2 or 3 last minute? And he's like, no, like no one's been in here for the past hour. And they're like, oh my gosh. And then funny enough, years later at one of our outreach activities, like a fair that we were at, a man came up to the booth and said like, oh, like I used to live in that house when I was younger before it was a museum. And he said one night he got up to get a glass of water at night or whatever. It was like a very huge house and it was split at the time between families. And he was coming down this, like he was downstairs and he was coming around the corner where the staircase was. And he looked up and he saw a man and he described the man like long hair, white collar. And he said he got so scared that he ran out of the house to the police office. And they're like, the police officers like brought him back and were like, it's, you're just got scared kind of thing. But he literally described exactly what my coworker had said without my coworker even mentioning anything about it. That story had never been told. So there's definitely like a lot of kind of spooky things like that. Thankfully, I've never experienced actually like seeing someone, but like even my coworker who she started there recently, like she's experienced things of like just some noises in the house that maybe like some footsteps and not actual like creaks of the house. Like if you work there long enough, you can kind of tell the difference. So it's definitely like, I want to say though, like, it's not like I go to work and I feel uncomfortable. Like I go to work and I feel comfortable. There's definitely times where like, if I'm there by myself or it's like getting to be like closing time. And that's usually when a lot of the stuff is happening. Like it'd be the like last hour of the day or after hours if we're there later. But, and we do things though, like at night, just like extra programs and stuff. So some of the time we have them like that happening, it gets kind of like spooky in that sense. But we've had like paranormal groups go through and they have picked up like little things, like some voices they've caught, and some like footsteps, and like they have all the equipment. So it'll be like the orbs like floating and things like that. So they have like caught like a few different things, but it's definitely, it's like, I don't know, it's hard because before this, like I wasn't really a believer and I don't necessarily know if I am or not, but like, I know that like I felt these things and I've experienced them and I know I trust my coworkers. So it's like, well, so the other one that happened to me too was I really don't like the dolls in the museum. So there, we have obviously different types of dolls, but because we house a lot of the collections, but there's a lot of older like porcelain dolls that are very, very creepy. And there's one where the eyes move when you like move it. And it's like, why is that even a thing? But we had moved them. They were in the children's bedroom, but we had like been doing an exhibit or a program in that room. So we'd move them up to the attic, but they weren't in their like shelf for the collections because we're just moving them back down again after. So they're just on like a table, like kind of ledge thing in the attic. And I was up there by myself and I was at the desk, which faces away from all the collections. That's all behind you, which is also creepy. But it's like working on the computer. And all of a sudden, like the lights start flickering, which like, I mean, like fine. It's like an old museum and stuff. But like, I swear, like I turn around and the only light that's flickering is the one right above the dolls. And I got up and I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm not doing this. Like, went downstairs. I was like, sorry, I will not be up in the attic today, at least the rest of today. So, yeah. And that's a thing we get, like, a lot of people say too, is that because there's so many artifacts and they've come from so many different places and have certain histories, like, who knows what kind of energies are attached to them.
I was just about to say, some people believe that energy is attached to objects like that. So, it's very interesting. And you have so many old ones. That's really cool, though. Yeah.
So like, it's definitely like, okay, well, we don't really know what happened or anything like that. And we kind of just take it in stride. But yeah, so it's definitely, it's fun. It's like, it's neat having all the stories. Like, it is kind of like, oh, wow, like this stuff happens. Like when we do our ghost tours, it's fun to tell people these stories. But at the same time, it's this, these are real to us. Like, we've experienced these. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. And for letting me share my spooky stories.
Yeah, and we're gonna get back to Chris now to share his last stories with us.
Okay, so I've got two personal stories for myself. The first story I have takes place at Fort York in the city of Toronto. So my girlfriend and I did a haunted walk at Fort York a couple of years ago. It was an interesting walk. They had some great stories. A tour guide essentially took us around the area of the fort, gave us a little bit of history of the city of York at the time. There were some graveyards we visited. They had great stories. And at the end of it, he took us back to the fort and led us inside one of the blockhouses. It was raining. It was kind of like a perfect ambiance for the last story that he was going to tell. So we go into the blockhouse and he shows us a model of what the city of York used to look like, and it's still there. There's a lighthouse on the spot. It's called Gibraltar Point Lighthouse. So he was telling us a story about one of the keepers. His name was George Rademuller. It's a really interesting story, and as he's telling us this, we're on the bottom floor and from above us there came this like knock sound. It was a heavy sound, and to me, it sounded like the brass butt plate of a musket tapping down on the floor like it was somebody putting a musket at ease. So my girlfriend and I looked at each other, and we were kind of like, did you hear that? Yeah, I heard that. And a couple of the other patrons on the tour looked, and they're like, hey, did you guys just hear that? And we're like, yeah, we did. We heard that. Yeah. And the tour guide is like, is everything okay? And we're like, yeah, we just heard a noise above us. He was like, oh, okay, well, there's nobody up there. Like, there's one door to the blockhouse, and we're all currently down here. So he said, if you'd like, after we finish the story, you guys are welcome to go upstairs. You can take a look around, see if there's anything interesting. Feel free to look at the exhibits. So for him, it didn't even faze him. He was like, no, I don't know. I didn't hear anything. Whatever. It's probably the wind. But it was a discernible knock. Like it was very clear. So he finishes the story. We walk upstairs and decide we're going to check it out. A couple of other people went up with us and we're looking around, and I started trying to see like, okay, maybe something in the exhibits came loose. It's highly unlikely, but it's possible that when like the curator was moving some stuff around, maybe it just was out of place. And there was nothing. Like everything was inside a glass paneled case. They all had floors that weren't wood. It wasn't connected to the wood. And there's a single door in and out of this blockhouse. So there's no way that somebody is up there like, oh yeah, let's give them a spooky finish to this story. We'll see if we can scare some people. Like there's only one way that the sound could have been made, and that was with some kind of object coming into contact with this old wooden floor. And there's nothing up there. Nothing had fallen. So it was a pretty interesting experience. That was kind of the first time that I've had something if you want to call it paranormal, happen and have it be inexplainable. Like, there was nothing that could have made that sound. So, yeah, so that was what happened to us at Fort York. The other story that I have, it happened just a few months ago, actually. I work for the school board, and I work at a school, and it's not particularly old. It was built in 1956, so it's not like it's super old and that prototypical spooky old school or anything, but it's got its own sort of legends, I guess you could say, anyways. But there is, in the office that we have, a small Batman figurine. So when I first started working there, it was just this ominous figurine sitting on top of a nail in between the two doors of the office. So I kind of like looked at it and I was like, okay, whatever. It's just like a toy. Somebody put the toy up there for fun. And then one day I asked him, I was like, what's the deal with this Batman? And they're like, oh, we don't talk about the Batman. It's bad juju. It's bad luck to talk about the Batman. Don't ever touch the Batman. I was like, okay, this is weird. Okay, whatever. But I'll subscribe to it. I don't want any bad luck. So the Batman was there. It just stayed there. And for 7 months, it was the norm. Like, oh, yeah, the Batman's there. Don't look at the Batman. Just go about your business. Yeah, it was about 7 months that I was at this site. And we came in one day. And the Batman had been tilted. I guess, actually, I should preface this. So the Batman, I asked, where did this Batman come from? And one of the employees there, he's been there for 18 years. He said when he had first started working there, he came in one morning and this Batman was exactly where it was. So he said, who put the Batman up there? Like, do you guys find this toy when you were working at night or something? And they're like, no, we came in and it was there. I didn't put it up. Did you put it up? No, I didn't put it up. So it just allegedly materialized and became this totem in the office. In the 18 years, no one had touched it. It had never moved. It never came loose. No one took it off and shifted it, as that, to my knowledge at least. So it was just always there. So I came in one day, 7 months into working there, and this Batman was tilted on an angle, kind of facing towards the right. So I looked at my coworker and I was like, there's no way I'm touching this. And he's like, man, I'm not touching it either. There's no way. There's absolutely no way. So it stayed like that for over a week. It was probably a week and a half. And we were in there in the morning and my colleague was sitting. This Batman would basically be just behind him. So his back was facing it. He's sitting in his chair. I stood up from my chair and turned the other way, and then this Batman came like flying across the room. So it came from the nail where it had never moved, and it came flying across the room. It was tilted to the right. My colleague was sitting pretty far to the left. So just judging by the physics of it, like, it wouldn't have just fallen on the ground and bounced weird. It would have to have been physically pushed and flipped the other way. It somehow came off and landed on the ground, and it landed behind my colleague, and we both just stopped and looked at each other, and he was like, did you just see that? And I was gobsmacked. I mean, like, we were both mind blown. We're like, well, maybe it could have fallen off the nail or something. And I was like, no, like, the nail is halfway across the room. Like, there's no way, even if it hit on the ground, that it would have bounced and flew the way that it did. So he and I left it there. We're like, there's no way I'm going to touch the Batman. If I wasn't going to touch it before, like, there's absolutely no way I'm going to touch that now. So the colleague that had been there for 18 years, he came in. He's like, are you guys good? And we're like, man, do you not see, like, that the Batman's not up there right now? And he's like, oh, man, oh, hey, where'd it go? We're like, it came flying off the wall today. And he was kind of getting a little bit visibly nervous, and he was like, oh, what, really? Oh, okay, you guys didn't put it back up? No way, we're not touching that. That's not happening. So he took the Batman And he put it back up. He's like, no, it's okay. It's okay to touch the Batman as long as, you know, you don't take it home with you or anything. It just it can't leave the building. So the superstition was just building around this thing. And yeah, to this day, it hasn't moved. It hasn't moved an inch since. And there's no way that it would have rattled off the wall or anything. It wouldn't have been blown by some breeze or gust because there's no windows in that room. It was just super, super bizarre.
Chris has actually ended up sending us a photo of this figurine. So we're going to post that on Instagram as well if you'd like to see. And the last story we have is stuff once again, but this is real life creepiness. So let's go ahead, Steph.
Do you remember when there was this whole trend where people were dressing up as clowns and like chasing people or popping up?
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
So there were actually some around our school and it was like on the news and stuff.
At Laurier.
Oh,
yeah.
There were some there. And one night I was like, walking home, of course, this is when I lived on the same street and whatever, and there was one that like, because I have a habit of looking behind me when I walk home. I think every woman does, and I check several times, especially at nighttime, and I never, well, not net never, I sometimes have my headphones in, but this night I didn't, and I heard footsteps, but I knew it was kind of far behind me, and I looked back and it was a clown. There was a clown just standing there. And that's when I just booked it. I ran so fast. I almost called the police, but I think I sprinted all the way to my house, and like, I got in and locked the door, and my roommate was like, oh my God, like, what's wrong? Are you okay? And I was like, hyperventilating and crying just because I'm like extremely afraid. Like, I'm pretty sure I have coulrophobia. Yeah, terrified.
Yeah, that terrified. Was fucked up. I forgot that happened.
Yeah, it was happening everywhere. It was like in every fucking town. Excuse my language, but seriously, yeah. Like, why was it a trend? Why did people need to do that? That's just terrible. Don't ever do that again.
Yeah. Even if you're just like doing it to just dress up and not be, you know, like a killer clown or whatever,
it's one thing to go to like a Halloween party and like scare people that way, or like kids are trick or treating and stuff like that, which is kind of rude that you would scare them that much, but
it wasn't even, you know, around Halloween, was it?
No,
it was just like randomly. Yeah,
it was just random, and it was like for months people were obsessed with this stupid trend, and it's literally like the worst thing ever. Like, people were pranking police. They were like, not where we were, but there were stories where there were groups of people that were like calling 911 and pranking police, and there was like one officer who thought he was gonna die and get killed by these clowns. Yeah. There are so many stories, and it's just gross. Like, you people suck. I don't like you.
Thank you everyone for sharing your spooky stories with us. If you didn't make it into the episode, feel free to email us your spooky stories or comments to witchstorypodcast@gmail.com. As we always love hearing about tales of the unexplained, creepy, or paranormal. We would also like to wish everyone a happy Halloween or blessed Samhain / blessed Beltane, or whatever it is you are celebrating. Thank you so much.